Hi everyone, my name's Kelly and I'm an addict. I'd like to say thank you to the secretary for taking the meeting and thank you to Shireen for asking me to do this evening. I've had a pretty crappy couple of days. No rhyme or reason to it, just going through one of those things, you know. I've literally been sat in bed all day eating fried chicken, feeling sorry for myself. And I knew I had to do this chair tonight and I was actually excited about it because there's nothing better than when you're feeling a bit down in the dumps like this and to do service, you know. So I'm so pleased to be here, and especially at this meeting, which is a meeting that I attend, you know, when it was face to face. I'm going to start at the beginning of my life because I feel like I like to tell my whole story, and I've got time here tonight. I've got like 25 minutes. So, and I do believe that everything that I'm going to talk about has shaped me and the person that I've become and contributed to some of the aspects as to why I became an addict as well. And I also feel like it's good for people to identify, you know, we all have different traumas in our lives, and it's always good to hear, as sad as it might be, it's always good to hear that somebody else has been through what you've been through, you know. So I hope I say something that somebody identifies with, and if not, please do keep coming back, because I promise you, you will hear your story or elements of it. So I grew up in the council estate in Luton. My mum's Spanish Catholic, my dad's a Jewish gypsy. So I was a very confused child and ridden with guilt growing up, you know. I grew up in a very, very violent household, very violent. My dad was a horrific cocaine addict and an alcoholic, and my mum was an alcoholic. And from a very, very young age, I mean, my dad would take drugs in front of me. When I was 3 years old, they called my mum into nursery because we'd been doing a cooking class, and I put a line of flour on the table and tried to sniff it up my nose because that's what I'd seen at home. You know, they go through at least 2 boxes of wine at night. Yes, boxes of wine. They're a very classy family, you know. Because my mum was Spanish, we were given alcohol with our dinner mixed with lemonade from when we were about 3 years old. So I've always been a drinker. I've always, you know, my dad was horrifically physically abusive, especially towards my mum, very mentally and emotionally abusive as well. And in turn, my mum then took that out on me. I did have a younger sister who was 4 years younger than me, but I protected her. You know, my mum would hit me. Her love always came with conditions. That unconditional love that you're supposed to have for your child, I never felt that. I never knew what that was. You know, she would berate me constantly. Nothing was ever good enough. I could get 100% in the test and she'd just say, not never like, well done. It'd be like, we'll just make sure you get that next time. You know, there were no cuddles. There were no I love yous. If I was hurt, if I was crying, I was told to stop crying. Crying was weak. You know, I was taught never to trust anybody. So I grew up it was a really, really sad existence, really, when I think back about it, you know. So I guess my first addiction became was fantasy. I get lost in books. I'd imagine that I was adopted. I'd imagine that I had this other adopted family that would come, you know, like little orphan Annie that would come and whisk me away out of all of this. And my only time on reprieve really is I used to be sent to Spain in the summers and at Christmas to go and stay with my family. And I loved that because they were so normal. You know, there was no drunk fights. There was no, you know, mum wouldn't be beating me with her slipper or with a wooden spoon. And it was just, and I loved those times. But obviously there was always drinking. Drinking was always a part of my life. And I think I sort of started to drink wine by itself when I was about 9 years old. By the time I was 11, I was getting drunk. And by the time I was 13, I was passing out in nightclubs with my feet in a toilet. You know, my mum and dad split up. He was a horrific cocaine addict and he had a love of prostitutes. And my mum used to clean the brothel where my dad used to go and see prostitutes in. So I was always surrounded by loads of really inappropriate sexual stuff. I was exposed to loads of stuff that I was a kid that I should never have been exposed to. You know, I remember we had this cupboard under the stairs and we had all of our videos, our VHS tapes, and there were like 4 shelves. And half of the shelf were all of my cartoons and the other 3.5 shelves were just filled with porn. You know, so my dad had a porn addiction as well. And I just remember bringing my friends around and going to choose a film and then me opening this cupboard under the stairs and just thinking it was completely normal for your dad to have sexy tapes, you know. Fucking hell, it's mental, isn't it? Now I think back about it. Anyway, my mum and dad split up when I was about 13 years old. And then my mum kind of like stopped caring. Like I said, I was going out to nightclubs. By the time I was 14, I was going out to Central London, coming home at 2-3 o'clock in the morning, going to clubs. Back then, it was so much easier. You know, I looked older. I did. I looked a lot older. I was smoking cigarettes. I was smoking weed. And I started to drink very, very heavily. I left home when I was 16 because I couldn't take it anymore. And just went, I kind of like, I went from boyfriend to boyfriend, moving in with different guys, you know, just always looking for my knight in shining armor. And all I ever ended up with was a fucking twat in tinfoil, you know. I always just looking for that love, always ended up with guys that were just like my dad. And I think that's because I was looking for that something that that I never had when I was a kid, you know, that family unit. And when I was 23, I met this guy. I was working in Foot Locker at the time. And I was going out, let me say, I was going out every single night and I was getting drunk and I was getting myself in situations, always going home with a guy, always having sex with people, you know. And I met this guy and I thought he was amazing. He was a drug dealer. I mean, he was just my type, you know. And I loved a fucking bird with a broken wing. And his mum was a crack addict. And, you know, he was obviously an addict as well, although I didn't see it at the time. And within 10 days of meeting him, I'd moved in with him. 2 days later, we were robbed at gunpoint, you know, and that was my life. 3 months in, I was pregnant, you know, because I wanted and that was planned. I wanted a kid because I wanted that family unit that I never had. And I just thought, if I've got something to love, and I thought I could fix this guy, you know, and he was awful. He was taking my money. Every time I got paid, he'd take all my money out of my bank account and buy drugs for him to, you know, to supply for his drug addict, for his drug habit. He was beating me up on a regular basis. He was horrifically abusive. I remember I was 8 months pregnant and I was in the bath and he just rolled this, we had this big, big, huge mirror and he just rolled the mirror into the bath and it just shattered all over me and I've still got scars on my belly, you know. I managed to stop drinking and smoking while I was pregnant. And he just continually beat me up while I was pregnant. I mean, and after I had my daughter, you know, I sort of realized that I needed to sort my life out and I sort of started drinking again. And sorry, it's really, really difficult to talk about this stuff. I called the police on him when he beat me up and the police would drive me to my mum's house. And when I got there, she'd say to me, "What did you do this time to make him do that to you?" There was no, "Oh, I love you. You know, okay, we can get through this. Let me send you to Spain to get away." And I wanted someone to save me. And about a week after my daughter's first birthday, I managed to have him arrested again. And my friend Crystal from up north, she came and got me in a car with her husband and her little boy. And I eloped and I did a moonlight flit, sorry, in the middle of the night. I managed to get away and she was an alcoholic and I moved in with her. And that's then when the drinking really started to get bad again. Like we were drinking every single day. And I'd moved on to spirits by then. I'd gone off the wine and moved on to spirits, you know. And I did kind of like a geographical and I moved to Liverpool and I moved to Bolton. And then I ended up down here in Hertfordshire, just outside North London. And, you know, my drinking was getting progressively worse. And then when my daughter was three, I met this guy and I thought he was amazing. I met him. I wanted to be an actress at the time. And, you know, I met him and I thought he was gorgeous. And I chatted him up and I remember he invited me around to his house and I was driving this shitty old Citroen and I got to his house and he lived in a mansion. I remember calling my mum up from outside and I was like, "Oh my God, like, what am I going to do? Like, I don't want to go in." She's like, "Kelly, men like him don't go for women like you." And I thought, you know what, fuck you, I'm going in. And I went in and I started dating this guy. And as it turned out, he liked to use cocaine. Now, because my dad was a cocaine addict, I'd never really dabbled in drugs, you know. And hard drugs like that. I'd always just been a weed smoker and a big drinker. And something in me sort of went, "Do you know what? I want to try this thing that my dad loved more than his kids. I want to know what this is, what this feels like." So he brought some round one night and I tried it. We did a couple of lines and then I started throwing up in the toilet and I was like, "Oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever." You know, like any normal person would be like, "Right, that's it, I'm never doing that again," or they'd fucking stop, you know. But no, not me. I kind of liked the feeling that it gave me. And I sort of, I didn't dive straight in. I kind of like did it every couple of months for about a year. And then in 2009, I was diagnosed with cervical cancer and I had to have an operation to have the cancer removed. And I nearly died after having the operation from a reaction to the anaesthetic. And after that, basically, I just thought, you know what? There's so many things I haven't done. I had my daughter really young and I just started partying and that was it. Coke became a massive part of my life. You know, it was an every weekend thing. And I was still dating this guy and he admitted to me that he liked seeing prostitutes. And obviously with that, my drug of choice, you lose all your sexual inhibitions. And we went to see escorts together. And then after a few months, and his parents were really, really rich. They were millionaires, you know, so he was funding the drug lifestyle. And he said to me, you know, I was a single mum on benefits trying to find a job. And he said to me, you know, you're not pulling your weight. You need to find a way to sort of pay your way. And I don't even know how this happened. And we went round and round in circles. And he said, I think you should become an escort. And I was like, no, there's no way on earth. I'm not doing that. And as time went on, after a couple of months, he kind of like ground me down and I was using drugs sort of like at the weekend and during the week. And I don't know how it happened. And basically, I've just fell into that trap of becoming, I became an escort. I have a lot of guilt and shame surrounding this. A lot of very bad things happened. This is one of the things that I still find really difficult to talk about, but it's such an important part of my journey and I need to speak about this. It was horrible, it was awful, but I did it for drugs. I did it because I needed drugs and I needed to drink and I had to be high to do it and I had to be drunk to do it, so it was like a vicious circle. During that time that I was having this lifestyle, by evening, during the day, I was training up to be a producer and I worked on fashion commercials. So during the day I was sort of running on sets and by night I was this sort of lady of the night, so to speak, you know. And eventually I worked my way up to becoming a senior producer and I managed to stop doing the sex work. And I thought, right, this is it. Okay, this is over. But my God, listen, the job that I was in, producing fashion commercials, it was a champagne cocaine lifestyle. I was entertaining clients. I was entertaining models. I was entertaining, you know, people that I worked with. And with that just came the drugs. And fuck it, I had an expense account. So I wasn't even paying for any of it. It was such a dangerous, dangerous time. I worked so much that my daughter was being neglected. The lights were on, there was food in the cupboards, all of that, but I wasn't there for her emotionally. And I have huge fucking regrets about that. You know, she kind of went to the wayside, but I thought, this is it. I've got everything that I thought that, you know, that everybody thought that those are the goals. You know, you've got the money and the holidays and the car, you know, and the handsome husband and the pretty little daughter who does dance lessons. I thought I had it all, you know. But I wasn't. I was using and I was staying up for 2 or 3 days at a time, you know. And it was fucking, it was hell, if I'm honest. When I look back at it now, you know, everybody thought I had this amazing life on the outside, but it wasn't. It was fucking awful. And I had all of that guilt and all of that shame from everything that I'd done in the past, all of that hurt from my trauma. And I just had this big black hole in my soul. And I kept just trying to fill it up with work and drugs and alcohol. And none of it was working. None of it was working, you know. Eventually, my husband, he got to a point where I was a very highly functioning addict. And he basically couldn't function as an addict. And I started doing, we did the same job and I was better than him. And he eventually started to resent me. He was becoming very emotionally abusive, very mentally abusive, very, you know, I was spiritually dead. And eventually it got to a point where one night we were having an argument and I got up and I found him pissing in the sink in the kitchen and I had a go at him and he slapped me around the face. And I was like, right, that's it. I've been through this before, the physical abuse. I kicked him out and I thought, right, this is it. This is great. Do you know what I mean? I can stop using drugs now, because it was him. Like in my mind, it was him. Of course, it was my choice to do those drugs, but it was him that was influencing me. And you know what, for 2 weeks I was great, I was fine, I was clean. And then it started again, and then that's when things really went downhill. I ended up losing my job because I was using every day, you know. and I was getting drugs for other people, and I was at the party, so I wasn't even paying for them, so they were being provided, you know, and I ended up losing my job. And it got to a point where a friend had to come and bang down my door. My daughter wasn't at school, my house was a mess, and she said, Kelly, I'm taking your daughter because you can't look after her. And I thought, okay, this is it, I can sort myself out now, this is it, I can get off the drugs. Didn't happen. It just meant that I could go out and party for days on end. Eventually, I ended up losing my house and becoming homeless. I'd lost my house, I'd lost my job, I'd lost my daughter, I had nothing. They ended up putting me in temporary accommodation in a trap house. You know, I was living with other drug dealers and sex workers and crackheads. And it was just awful. And I was still using. And I loved it because I was numb. I couldn't feel. I didn't feel anything. And I wanted that. I didn't want to have any feelings. But with that, I was missing out on the good stuff as well as the bad stuff and the trauma that was inside me. Anyway, I was at my friend's one night, and I turned around, and I'd been there since Friday, and it was Sunday evening, and I looked and she was smoking crack in the corner, and I was like, Kelly, what are you doing? You need to fucking sort your shit out. And apologies for my swearing, by the way. And I was seeing a guy at the time, and he looked after me, and he was like, Kelly, you don't need the drugs, which is kind of funny because he was a coke dealer, but he'd never sell to me. He was like, Kelly, you don't need the drugs. And I detoxed with him for a week, and I went home and I got on the meetings, and I just Googled meetings on my phone, and there was one that evening, and it was our sister fellowship AA, and I went down there. And I was sweating and I was shaking. Everything was still coming out of my system, you know, and I was crying. And this guy came over to me and he was like, you know, are you okay? Do you want a cup of tea? And I'm thinking, what does he want? Do you know what I mean? Straight away, I was like, what does he want? Does he want something from me? Nobody wanted fucking anything from me. You should have seen the state of it, mate. I looked horrific. There was no way that anybody was trying to, you know, jump on me. Anyway, I sat there and I listened to the chair, and I didn't really identify. It was like, oh, white Irish man, you know, but I kind of got the sentiment of what was going on. And at the end, this woman came up to me and she told me all about NA, and she told me about a women's meeting in Ladbroke Grove. And I went to that women's meeting 3 days later, and I identified with every single woman that shared something. I identified so much with the share, and I cried my eyes out the whole way through. I really did. You know, And I just listened and I did everything they said. They said, do 90 meetings in 90 days. I did 145 meetings in 90 days because I couldn't stop. I had to just keep doing meetings because my addict was coming out in other places. I was having sex with guys left, right and center. I was shopping, all of that, you know, all of those things. And I just, to stop me from doing anything else, I had to do meetings. So I was doing 2 or 3 meetings a day, you know, and I just took all of the suggestions. And I did everything that they said, you know, and that's where I get my 5 S's from. So my guide to recovery are my 5 S's. First one is sharing. Share how you're feeling, because you need to get that out and share with other people for them to identify with you and for you to identify with them. And also it's good for the soul. Service is so important. Part of my recovery was meeting other addicts. So for me, doing a service position was great. And I was greeter. I loved that because you get to talk to everybody. You know, making the tea was another good one for me. You get to interact with other addicts. And also you're giving back to a program that's given so freely to you. You know, get a sponsor, someone who can guide you through, someone that you can call on, someone who has been in the program for a while and can tell you what's what and put you straight. You know, number 4, work the steps. The steps, oh my God. I mean, to really know yourself, you have to work these steps, especially, you know, to have a solid 1, 2, and 3, you know. And then when you get onto that step 4 that everybody's so scared about, but boy, is it amazing, you know. And number 5, shut the fuck up and listen, right? Because sometimes we get so much in our heads that we don't listen to what everybody else is saying. You know, like, just so sit and listen to other addicts, listen to what other people are saying to you, listen, you know. And sorry, how long have I got left? 5. Brilliant. Okay. So those are my, so I went by those 5 rules. And you know what? I loved going to meetings, and it wasn't an easy journey. When I was 60 days clean, my daughter was on holiday in America and she got run over by a car. And that was the most awful experience of my life. I was on the other side of the world. She was with somebody that I trusted to look after her who didn't. And at 60 days clean, I could very, very easily have gone out and used on that. But you know what? I didn't. I worked my program. I didn't shout at the woman. I didn't, you know. And she flew back. Thank God she only had a broken ankle. But when she came back, I told her that she had to move back home with me. And I'd been working on myself and I thought that she'd be happy. And do you know what she did? She spat at me. She hated me. Hated me, did not want to move back. And I was adamant. I was like, no, you need to move back in. So she moved back in with me and I just showed her. I had worked. I showed her how hard I'd worked to change, you know, that this isn't that old woman wasn't me anymore. You know, the one who ignored her, the one that left her to the wayside. You know, this is me now, that I'm here and I'm present for you. I'm here for you there emotionally and mentally and spiritually as well. You know, and I worked so hard on that. And I kept doing service. I kept going. It was not more difficult when she came back to live with me to even do a meeting a day, because I had to be there for her. So I was doing a meeting every couple of days. Sometimes if I could squeeze two in while I was out, I would do that. Because I think in early recovery, it's really important for you to go to these meetings, because it's so important to surround yourself with other addicts. And that was the other thing that was really good as well, is that she saw the kind of people that I was surrounding myself with. And I was surrounding myself with good, wholesome people. I was surrounding myself with other addicts, people who understood me. You know, I've got an amazing connection with my higher power. My higher power is the universe. And I believe that what you put out there is what you get back. You know, so being good, being kind, helping other people. You know, I don't do it to get that back, but I do it because it makes me feel good about myself. But in return, I've been getting so many, you know, I get so much. I am the gifts of recovery, you know, they do come. And I thought when I came into recovery, I thought, I want my job back. I want my house back. I want my career back. I want my car back. I want lots of money. Those were the goals. Let me tell you now, those are not the goals. My goals are to be happy. That is literally it. My goal is to have a good relationship with my daughter. My goal is to have amazing people in my life. You know, I don't talk to my mum, my sister, or my dad anymore, because they're so abusive and they triggered my using and they triggered my alcoholism. You know, but what I tell you what, the most beautiful and wonderful thing that this program has given me is unconditional love. Unconditional love from other people that was all that I wanted when I was a kid, was to be loved by somebody for nothing in return. And with these amazing people that I have found in these rooms and in this program, that's what I've got now. You know, my relationship with my daughter is incredible. You know, she tells me she's proud of me nearly every single day. Thank you, acknowledge. She tells me she's proud of me nearly every single day. And well, I'll end on this. We were homeless. And then the day after I picked up my year key ring, we got our house. So now I sit here in my house that I've decorated myself, that I've paid for myself. I don't have the money. I don't have the car. I don't have the career, but I am richer than I have ever been in my entire life. And I am so, so grateful. Thank you for letting me share today. I'll leave it there.